Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride.
My episode today is an interview with Courtney Barrett, who's an associate professor in the School Psychology program in the College of Education at Michigan State University. Courtney and her family spent a semester in Ireland on a Fulbright fellowship. It actually wasn't Courtney's sabbatical, but the conversation with Courtney provides great insight into spending a semester away with a family and also into applying for and working out a Fulbright. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Courtney. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So before we dive into your semester in Ireland, could you introduce yourself and tell us briefly about the focus of your scholarship?
Sure. So my name is Courtney Barrett. I'm an associate professor in the College of Education at Michigan State University. And my research focuses on the adoption and implementation of evidence-based practices in schools. And I focus a lot on how data are used to make decisions about students, specifically in the context of special education qualification, and how we can best support teachers and administrators to do their best work with kids.
Great. Thank you. So you recently spent a semester in Ireland, and it wasn't a sabbatical, but you took a leave and you had a Fulbright fellowship for that semester. So can you tell me about it? What led you to pursue a semester away? How did you negotiate that with your department? And, you know, and I have a lot more questions, but maybe we could start with that.
Yeah, sure. So I've always wanted to pursue a Fulbright experience. I don't know. I mean, maybe even like since I was, you know, in undergrad or something like that. And I always had the assumption or idea, and I'm not sure where I got this, that I had to that had to coincide with a sabbatical. And then I coincidentally ran into a colleague, a friend, who had also gone on a Fulbright pre-tenure kind of before her sabbatical. And so it, you know, sort of opened up this world that maybe I could pursue this earlier than I thought. So that was when I began to look into the Fulbright application process a little bit more seriously. And when I began to look at the website related to the different types of opportunities they have for faculty and other professionals, there was one opportunity that really jumped out at me, and it was called Investigating the Impact of Innovative Research Dissemination or something like that, which really aligns with my work because I look at how educators, you know, conceptualize and use research to inform their practice. You know, how do they think about kind of research broadly or specific evidence-based practices? And how can we disseminate those kind of, you know, more broadly or more equitably? So when I saw that opportunity, I felt like, you know, I had to jump on it because it was so specific and so well aligned. And so that was, let me think, I think I ran into that friend in maybe the late spring, early summer. And then I applied, you know, that August, September.
Okay. Those Fulbright applications are usually due like early September, right?
Yep, exactly. Yep. So that was kind of the timeline and how it came to be.
And sorry to interrupt you, was that opportunity specifically in Ireland or was it a broader opportunity and then you had to find a setting for it?
Yes, that's such a great question. So one of the things I learned about Fulbright, and I'm certainly not an expert on this, but what I've gleaned is that there are opportunities that are kind of open calls. And they're kind of like all disciplines, and you have to go find both a topic area and an institution abroad to kind of match that. This was a very specific call put out by a specific university in Ireland. So on the one hand, it made it kind of a little bit easier for me because I didn't have to find, you know, a university to host me. But it was like this very niche kind of topic area. So I had to really try to, you know, focus my application materials to meeting that that priority of theirs.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So yeah, so before, you know, so when we decided to apply, I honestly can't remember exactly when I talked to my department chair. I can't remember if it was, and my husband, he doesn't work in academia. He's an engineer in industry, and he doesn't work remotely. He has to work, he's in like research and R&D, and so he has to be kind of hands-on working with machinery in his organization. So we both kind of like tried to take the approach of like putting out feelers, like we're thinking about applying for this, but it's very competitive. So who knows if it'll even happen. But our idea was that by the time you apply and then when you find out, like a lot of time has passed and you can kind of have those conversations gradually.
Right.
I think that's useful because, you know, administrators, they have to put in so much work to support that, which is awesome that we got that support. But just in terms of negotiating various administrative things, it takes a while. So we wanted to make sure that we were never pressuring or felt like rushed or urgent so that the administrators could kind of work their magic as they needed to.
Yeah, that makes sense. So with your husband's job then, how did he ultimately negotiate that if he can't work remotely?
Yeah, so first, I will say he is very lucky, and we're very lucky that he has a very supportive company, and he's worked really hard to develop strong relationships with the people in his company and to just work really hard so they value him. So I think that was like an important foreground to having those conversations. And he basically cobbled together, his vacation time, which he has allocated, and some different types of kind of personal leaves and administrative leaves. So he was paid for, I think, about half of it, and then had kind of like an unpaid leave for the other half of it. So yeah, that was how we worked through that.
And then for you, since I know the Fulbright provides a salary supplement often or salary replacement, were you on leave from MSU, or how did you negotiate the logistics of your situation?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So from what I kind of also gleaned from our university is that decision and how people, you know, the specific, yeah, logistics of their situation varies across colleges and departments. So there isn't maybe a set kind of policy. So I think that also it's really important to, you know, kind of advocate for yourself, but also keep in mind the needs of the university and your program and your department to ensure that kind of nobody is getting, left out. Mm-hmm. So I had a 1-1 like teaching load that year. So I was supposed to teach one class in the fall and one class in the spring. And I just negotiated to teach both of my classes in the spring so that my research load, I was primarily on a research load in the fall. And that coincided with many of the activities that I was doing on my Fulbright. And so I didn't have to take any sort of leave. I also made sure to, you know, zoom into, you know, faculty meetings and, you know, continue to work with my doctoral advisees. So I didn't feel like, much was that different, I suppose, than typical.
Except for your geography.
Exactly.
And getting your kids adjusted to living in a new place, new schools. And all that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Except I did have, yeah, those faculty meetings were now at like 11 o'clock at night or whatever, you know, so.
Right. The time difference is not inconsequential. Now, I think you have two young kids, right? And they were in Ireland with you. Can you tell me a little bit about how old they were and how that went? Like, were they involved in the process of deciding to go on this research leave, or did you kind of tell them at the end, and how did they react?
Yeah. So my kids now are 7 and 9. And so when we were in Ireland, they were 6 and 8. Mm-hmm. We also, maybe much like our administrators, we kind of slowly introduced the idea over time so that by the time we were informed that we had gotten the award and we're going to be moving, they were pretty used to the idea and pretty excited about it. I can actually remember I got the email that I was a finalist in the evening, and my daughter was next to me in the computer, next to me by the computer. And I remember when I got the email, we both just started cheering and dancing together. It was really cute and really fun. She was so excited.
That's awesome.
And both my kids, they tend to value just travel. Both of me and my husband have kind of international backgrounds. So that was something that they were just really excited about and that we've kind of talked about a lot and traveled to other areas. So they weren't, that hesitant, I guess, about the international part. They were, understandably, they actually invented a new word at this time. They called it skeerited. They were half scared, half excited.
I love that.
Yeah, we use it all the time now. It actually is very descriptive for a lot of situations. And so they were most worried about a lot of the things that you would expect from a 6 and 8 year old, that they were going to be going to a new school, that they were going to be have to make new friends, were they going to miss out on what their friends were doing here. So that was most of their, I guess, hesitation. So we also tried to be really mindful about that. So when we first got to Ireland, we took a full week of just like a family vacation. So there was no, like jumping right into school the Monday after we got there. So we could get settled in our apartment and, just getting the lay of the land. Life was a little bit different over there. We didn't have a car, so we were taking all, public transportation in a new city, so things like that. During that week, we visited their school. And in Ireland, school uniforms are, I don't know if everywhere has it, but they're certainly very common. And so we got their, kind of school uniforms and just kind of introduced them to that idea while also just having a lot of fun. We were all excited to be there.
That's great. And I was thinking too that, the Fulbright application cycle, like you said, your application is under review for such a long time. And then I'm guessing you found out that you were accepted into the program. There probably wasn't a lot of turnaround time.
Yes. This is my advice to everybody that I talk to who's thinking about applying to a Fulbright. When I applied, we were just really excited to go if I got it. And so we just wanted to go in the fall just for the sheer fact that it was as soon as possible. In retrospect, I might have considered waiting to the spring, although after our experience in Ireland in the fall, I actually am happy that we went at that time. So we found out in April, the beginning of April, and so we had, just a few months to find an apartment and to find schools for the kids. And those had to all align. So there are a couple of contexts about Ireland specifically that made this particularly challenging. First is that Ireland is having a huge housing crisis. And Ireland is such a fascinating country, but they have one of the largest worldwide diaspora relating back to the potato famine. And that this is the first time that they had such a significant social, economic, political progress that now Ireland is becoming very popular. And so this is the first time actually that the population has surpassed the population levels pre-potato famine. And so because of that, there is a really bad housing crisis. So it's very difficult to find housing. And it's especially very difficult to find housing for like a semester and not like a full year kind of lease. So that was our first challenge. And then our second challenge was that many of the Irish elementary schools, because it is still a predominantly quite a religious country, many of the schools are also single sex schools, so boys schools and girls schools. And so I have a son and a daughter. And so we had to find schools that were nearby each other that there was a spot for both my son and my daughter. And then having an apartment kind of nearby. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really going to be feasible with public transportation for us to probably travel, 20, 30 minutes to drop my son off at school and then 20, 30 minutes in a different direction to drop my daughter off at school. So I don't know. I mean, it just sort of magically happened that we found a place to live and there was a they're two separate schools, but they're on the same campus. They're kind of brother sister schools that both had spots that were willing to take our kids.
And these are public schools, like government schools?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Most of the public schools, so they don't, I mean, yeah, the private school situation is, maybe it exists, but it's very, very minimal. Even the public schools often have what they call an ethos, which might be a set of values or most likely a religious affiliation. So these are public schools that our kids attended.
Okay. So did Fulbright or the university that you were affiliated, like, did anyone help you navigate all this? Or were you just kind of like, you know, searching things, joining Facebook groups and hoping for the best?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There was a contact, because also this university was the, had put out this call. There was a specific name that was associated with that call. And that person's administrative assistant was so helpful and was just so kind and supportive. And so there was actually one situation where we had found this this listing for a potential house on, they have a specific website called Daft that is very common there. And it almost seemed too good to be true. So I thought maybe I should check this out. And so she was so kind and went and looked at it and was like, yeah, this is probably some sort of scam, you know. You know, so they were really helpful. And also with the schools, we would kind of ask them, you know, just about the quality of the school or the reputation of the school. Because in Ireland, and one of the things I'm in the field of education that we really liked about Ireland is that Ireland has actually one of the most equitable public education systems in the world. Because they don't have, or one factor in that is that they don't have, you know, private schools. And so we knew that there wasn't that much kind of variability in terms of which school, but I did, you know, want to just check, you know, to make sure there was like a, you know, a positive kind of vibe about the school. So, so she would kind of give us those insights as well.
The other thing I wanted to ask you, so what did you do with your house, back at home in Michigan? Did you leave it empty? Did you rent it? How did you figure that part out?
Yeah, that's another really good question. So we thought about this. We thought about trying to rent it out or something, but it honestly wasn't enough time that I felt like the kind of hassle wasn't really worth the trade-off. I think our biggest thing was we have two cats. And so we had to drop our cats off at my in-laws. And we had somebody come, our neighbor, who's also faculty at MSU, who's a dear friend. They came and checked on our house and drove our cars just so they didn't die, I don't know, once a week. But it also was helpful for them because they had a high school daughter who had just gotten a license, who didn't have a car yet, who could kind of use our car. So it actually turned out to be beneficial for everybody. So that was sort of how we decided to deal with that.
So what kind of stands out as the highlights?
Honestly, yeah, we all just loved it so much. I can say that it might rank up there in the best like 3 months of my life.
That's so exciting. I love that.
Yeah, I had studied abroad when I was an undergrad, which I also loved. But so this was the only other time that I've actually lived abroad. So we've traveled and visited and vacationed, but I think there's a really big difference between living somewhere and kind of visiting somewhere. And so that was just a really great experience. And then to be able to do it with my husband and children was also just made it that much more special because, yeah, I got to see like real life, meaning like the day-to-day of school, but I also got to see how they learned new things about, you know, a different country. So I think that was just the best part of it. Ireland is just an amazing country. So of course there were, you know, beautiful sights and really interesting history, and the people are wonderful. So we got to meet, you know, some lovely friends that we still talk to. But I think just the day to day, you know, kind of exploring was really our favorite thing.
That's great. And what was your day to day like? Was it kind of similar to your life as a faculty member here? Were you going to campus and working? Were you working from home?
Pretty much, I would say that it was actually pretty similar to what my life looks like here. So in the mornings, I think my husband actually probably had the biggest difference because he was sort of a stay-at-home dad for 3 months. We always joke that he got like a mini sabbatical.
Right.
So, yeah, he would, you know, he was a stay-at-home dad, so he would do a lot of the kind of dropping the kids off at school and that thing, that type of thing. And then I would either go into the office. So the university was also so kind to let me use an office for a woman who was on maternity leave at that time. And so I had an office and a nice dedicated space on campus. So I would go there, you know, about half the time. I would work from her apartment, you know, about half the time. We were collecting data. So we conducted a qualitative study. So I interviewed a lot of administrators. I did some school visits. So that was pretty kind of typical. And then when our kids got out of school, some days they had after school clubs. So they would stay a little bit later, which is also kind of like here. And then in the evenings, we would, you know, pick up the kids and then we would go into town or, you know, explore, go on another adventure. So it was really, it was pretty similar my day to day as here, except we did a lot more, I guess, kind of going out than we do here.
I didn't ask you where you lived in Ireland. Were you in Dublin or another city?
We were in Cork, which is on the south part, on the south kind of side of the island. And it's the second largest city. And Cork is, I loved it. It has a nice kind of culture in that it led the resistance. And so there's just this kind of rebellious, a little bit, you know, kind of, I don't want to say gritty, but like, you know, kind of like a little fighter, you know, yeah. Which I really loved that kind of culture. And the history was really, really interesting there too, specifically.
Okay. Yeah. And I bet it was probably fun. I did a sabbatical in France and we were in Bordeaux, which is kind of a small city. And it was just being in a city was really fun for my kids who are similar in age to yours. You know, they loved the tram and the bus, and sometimes we would just ride the tram for fun, right? Because that was an adventure. Did your kids like kind of just living in a different environment?
Yes, absolutely. So they have the double-decker buses. We loved those. And we had just kind of, we ended up having jokes about the buses that would be, you know, on time or late, or they were kind of elusive. And so we had several days where we would just be running and hysterically laughing, trying to catch a bus. So yeah, they really liked it. And they also, Cork is a very small city, but it does have a nice kind of downtown area, which is really, really cute. And so they loved kind of going there.
Yeah. That's awesome. You mentioned that when you guys first arrived, you took a week to just kind of explore as a family. How did their transition into school go?
The other thing that we did do kind of related to this, so my kids, the way that it sort of it was kind of half planned, half coincidence, but they went to their school here in Michigan for a week. And then we went on vacation. So it was actually very useful so that when they came back, it wasn't totally new. Like they'd met their teacher before, you know, they'd been in the classroom before. So there was like, I think that was actually really helpful.
I wouldn't have even thought of that, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah. And then they're doing introductions at that time anyway in school. So it was just really, it worked out well. Acclimating to Irish schools was actually quite easy for the kids. I imagine 99% of that though is because they speak English. So that was made it much easier. And because, you know, Ireland and the US have had very positive relationships in the past. And so a lot of the students were really kind of fascinated that our kids were American. And so they were kind of met with like this admiration a little bit. So that was pretty easy. I think the adjustment back to Michigan was a little bit more difficult, just the way that, you know, I got to really understand the differences in the culture of the educational system. So here, our kids' school is kind of much more, there's a lot more pressure and a lot more assessment and tests. And so when the kids came back, they were not used to that. So I can remember it was like the first, you know, 2 weeks back, and our kids were taking the NWEA test, and they had a spelling test and a fact fluency test, and none of those things went well. Whereas in Ireland, the grading system is different, and kind of their approach to learning is a little bit different. So that was a little bit more of a transition. So it was easier, I think, going there than it was kind of coming back. But, you know, by the end of the school year last year, they were fine and back into the swing of things, and it was okay.
What advice would you give for folks who are, you know, thinking about or planning to take their kids abroad for sabbatical? Or is there any wisdom that you feel like you've accumulated from the process?
That's a really good question. I don't know if wisdom. I think we were, again, very blessed with a lot of just the contextual factors, like, you know, that we went somewhere where they were spoke English, you know? And I think that our kids were also a really good age for it, in that they were old enough to remember it and for it to like make an impact, but not so old that it would be kind of really difficult or disruptive to their own kind of social or personal lives. So I think those things were kind of helpful. I think the other thing too is to think about the timing. So before, I said, I wish I would have maybe gone in the spring to give us more time to find housing and schools. But I actually was happy that we went in the fall, A, because in Ireland, so I might, like, if I was giving advice, I might encourage people to think about the local context. So in Ireland, the weather was much better. A lot of the big major kind of Irish holidays are happening in the fall semester. So I'm really glad that we went then rather than in the spring. And I think it worked out easier for our children to acclimate to Irish schools in the beginning of the school year. So they were there. I think we missed maybe the first like 3 days of school, but they were basically there. So like, it's not like everybody had already known each other and like been in a routine. So I think that in hindsight, like, it was hard, you know, figuring out logistics in the fall or in the summer. But then I think it did actually probably work out better that we went in the fall. Yeah. So I think my advice would be to encourage people to consider the local context, like if there's a hurricane season or things like that, to try to go and avoid that.
Any other advice that you would have about finding a Fulbright opportunity or applying, anything that you learned through that process that you think would be important for people to know about?
Yeah. So I had the assumption that that people often went on Fulbrights during sabbatical, which I think is true. But when I talked to some other people who are kind of more involved in the Fulbright organization, they said that many people don't, just because it's hard to time it, because when you have to apply for sabbatical and you don't know if you're going to get the Fulbright, and oftentimes it takes 2 to 3 tries, like that while it's great when it works that way, but that it's not that uncommon when it doesn't align. So I learned that, which I now kind of tell people. I think the other thing that was really helpful for me with applying is just to use the resources in your kind of social network to help you with the application process. So here at MSU, we have a Fulbright liaison who gave me feedback on my application, who was so helpful. Because I'd never really written an application like that before. I don't know. Was your sabbatical, was it a Fulbright?
It wasn't, but I actually did apply for a Fulbright when I thought I was going to go to Tanzania. And then I withdrew my application. It is very different than, it's not like applying for a grant. And each program has its own specific thing that you have to speak to, right?
So that was definitely interesting. And then the other thing too that I found, so I wasn't sure and that I got a lot of feedback on, was there's this interesting balance between, like, they ask you some personal questions in the application, and then they ask you obviously some more kind of like professional, like research related questions, teaching related questions. I got some great advice and sometimes even some conflicting advice, but it was useful to give me the breadth of things to think about. So in terms of the personal kind of perspectives or relationships or connections to the country, I heard mixed kind of viewpoints on whether they wanted someone who had a lot of experience with that country, or if they wanted someone like, and on the one hand, like, that's good because you're familiar with the country. But on the other hand, they want to kind of disseminate this knowledge to a broader group of people. And then on the other hand, if you don't know enough about the country there, I think there's potentially this fear that, like, you won't acclimate well, or you might not enjoy it. And so striking that balance, I think, is really interesting and hard. And so I got a lot of feedback on that, like, how to position myself as, like, you know, Ireland being kind of a unique context and a novel context for me, but not so novel that I might not know what I'm getting into.
So now you will have a sabbatical coming up in a couple of years, probably, right?
Yes.
So how do you think that this semester in Ireland will inform how you think about that sabbatical?
Yes. So I doubt that we will go abroad again, just because I would love to, but it would be hard for my husband and my kids, I think, to do that again. I mean, it's so wonderful when you're there, but it is, I mean, you kind of upend your life, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
So I'm not sure if we have that in us as a family, to do that again next year, you know? So, you know, if I go on sabbatical, I'm planning on, you know, kind of applying next year and then having it be more local. But I'm really glad that we did it. I don't know if we'd be able to do it again at this point.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, we love the semester abroad, and then, I actually had a full year sabbatical, so we spent half of it in France and then half back at home. And then I think a couple of months ago, my husband was like, we could just apply for Fulbright's, you know, anytime, kind of like what you did. And I was like, yeah, we could. And also our son is going to be in middle school next year, right? So I think we also hit that sweet spot. Ours were 5 and 9 when we went. So it was kind of yeah, same thing that you said. It wasn't, you didn't feel like you were wrenching them away from their friends as much as I probably would if they were in middle school or high school. So yeah, it's hard to get all the stars to align. So I'm glad that the Fulbright worked out when it did.
Exactly. Yeah. We have thought about going to do some abroad kind of work over the summer so that it would be at least less disruptive to the kids, you know, do a month or two over the summer. That is something that we've explored and considered. So I don't know, perhaps that will be in our future at some point.
Yeah. Do you think you would go back to Ireland or do you want to go somewhere new?
I think both. I think, yeah. I mean, we'll be going back to Ireland to present at a research conference. And so I think we're planning on all kind of going, but that will just be a week in the spring, but we would love to go back there. And there were so many places, I mean, in Ireland. So we went, we basically went somewhere and did a big kind of weekend trip, pretty much every weekend. Mm-hmm. And still did not see even half the country. So we could definitely go back to Ireland, but then there are so many other countries that we want to go to. So I'm not sure.
Well, it's exciting. And have you maintained your connections with the university that you were based at during your Fulbright?
Yes. So I met the most amazing collaborator there, because the person, the main connection was a dean. They were more of an administrator. And so I made a really wonderful collaboration, though, with another faculty member. And so we have two papers in revision right now. And we have two conference presentations. He's actually going to AER.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, our project got accepted there. And then I just submitted last Friday to apply to the major education research conference in Ireland. So, so we still have a pretty good connection there. And I hope to see the, the dean and the administrative assistant. They were so kind. When I got back to my office in the U.S., they had sent me this large care package of all Irish things. It was the most thoughtful gift. It made me so happy. We loved the butter there. And we had other little foods that we found that we really liked. We love Barry's tea. So Barry's tea is the type of tea they drink in Ireland. And so we only now drink Barry's tea. We don't drink coffee anymore. We only drink berries. And when you're in Ireland, people will just say, oh, do you want a cup of berries? People don't even call it tea. They just call it berries. And so we now have, you know, taken that custom where my family will have an hour where we will all read together and drink a cup of berries. So we loved it.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that's so special, I think, about, you know, actually living somewhere as a family. And we're seeing this too now. My kids will be like, do you remember when we did this in France? And you have that kind of shared experiences and new routines and things that you enjoy, or inside jokes that are from that time. So it's so special, so gratifying.
Totally. It is.
Well, Courtney, thank you so much. It's been so great to hear about your semester in Ireland. And thank you so much for spending the time with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I just loved it. So I love talking about it. And I think this is such a great idea to have a platform for people to share their sabbatical experiences.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.